Welcome to Our Story, the podcast. Every month, Pastor Mark from Harmony Toluca Lake sits down with a guest to discuss their journey of faith from an inclusive, affirming point of view. These personal stories are part of a colorful tapestry of individual life experiences that transcend the boundaries of church by connecting us all together, collectively, through faith, hope, and love. This is Our Story.
Hey everyone, Pastor Mark here with the Harmony Toluca Lake campus and faith community, and we are here together for another Our Story, the podcast episode. And today I have a very special guest, Ruth Williamson from the Hollywood campus, and we are going to engage in a conversation today. Hey Ruth.
How are you, Mark?
I am great as always, and you?
I'm well, thank you.
Awesome. So, we're just going to jump in. Are you ready to just go
Let's
for it?
Let's talk about it.
Okay. Well, I'm interested in your story, and I know it's going to be of interest to other people. So, but let's just start off with an easy question. Are you ready?
Yeah, sure.
What kind of food do you like?
Well, I know this is a cliche, but I do love pizza. I do.
What kind of pizza?
I love pizza because it involves hot cheese. So I just like a nice margarita pizza is what I like.
I love it. That's great. I love a good pizza as well. So, yeah.
We have that in common.
Yes, we do. So you were raised in Baltimore.
I was, yes.
And a dear friend of mine is from Baltimore, one of my closest friends, Charles Klossmeyer. Oh. And so, so you went to school there?
Yeah, I from the time I was born, I grew up in Baltimore in the northwest suburbs, went to college at Maryland. I went to the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, because I got a good scholarship because it was a state school.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a really good education. I got to be on stage. I majored in theater, got to be on stage a lot, had some really great teachers.
Awesome. So did you know that you wanted to do theater at that point? Or at what point do you think in your growing up that suddenly you went, theater?
I sort of remember being in a farewell assembly in junior high school, and a couple of the teachers said to me, "You're really good. You should probably try to be in some of the plays in high school." So I was in all the plays in high school.
Caught the bug.
I caught the bug in a big way and then decided that's what I had a passion for, and I followed my bliss.
Mm. Did you, by the way, did you go to church during your youth?
I went to church as a kid, and I was really active in my teen years. I went to MYF at the time. It was called MYF, not UMYF.
And what does that mean for our listeners?
Methodist Youth Fellowship.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a lot of fun. We would go camping, and we would have outings, and you know, I remember one time. This was dating myself, but Jesus Christ Superstar, the musical had just, the album had just come out.
Uh-huh.
And I remember we went over to our leader's house, this very cool couple, young couple, and we sat and listened to Jesus Christ Superstar. That was like our big meeting.
And that was controversial at the time.
It was, yeah. Yes. But we loved it.
Andrew Lloyd Webber, who I've met.
You have?
Yes.
Oh, gosh,
yes. And his dad helped lead a choir that I was part of when I lived in London.
Wow.
So, yes. Another story for another time.
I guess.
So graduated from University of Maryland.
I did.
Go Terrapins. And and then you moved to New York.
I moved to New York. I actually worked at the Morris Mechanic Theater for a year and saved like $1,000 or something, right? You know. And then I lost that job. The Morris Mechanic shut down, and that was the theater in Baltimore, the big Broadway touring house. I had worked in the subscription department, and so the theater shut down. I broke up with my then-boyfriend, and I remember my boss in the subscription department said to me, a woman named Jan DeVinny, she said, "Ruth, if you're ever going to move to New York to be an actor, you should do it now. There's nothing holding you here." And I did. I moved to New York, and I had extraordinary good luck. I got a job. I went up there this is youth. I went up for a week and gave myself a week to find an apartment. And I did. I found a roommate who needed a roommate. I found a place to live. And on my last day there, I had time before the train, And I went to an audition, and I got the job.
Wow.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Do you remember what job it was?
It was the Prince Street Players. It was a children's theater company. They were Emmy Award winning. They were really good. And I got a tour of Cinderella and Wizard of Oz. Right. And I got my equity card.
Oh, wow. Yes, and that was not easy.
Was not easy to get. So that started me off. And then one thing led to another.
So you can almost say, in a way, that the boss that you had in Baltimore was divinely moving you forward.
Yes, she was.
Wow.
And she was funny. Her name was Jan Divini. It's a little close to divine.
Yeah.
Anyways, yes, she was a great lady. And she was all for me trying to be an actress. Mm. She thought that was terrific.
And wow, so you hit the ground running, got a place, got some parts.
Yeah.
How did this all start rolling out for you?
Well, I guess the big break for me was I got a national tour of Annie, which at the time was the big hit.
Mm-hmm.
That was great. And I rode the Annie train for about as far as you can ride it. I was in it for about 3 years, different companies. Mm-hmm. You know, there were like four companies of Annie, plus the Broadway show. So that knocked down some doors for me.
What role did you play in Annie?
Well, I understudied Miss Hannigan.
Oh.
And then I was understudying a wonderful actress named Ruth Cobart, and she got sick in Boston. And so the big boys from New York came up to see what the understudy, oh, they've got this kid on.
Mm-hmm.
I was 28 years old. They were like, oh, she's wrecking up our show in Boston. So they came up to see me, and they liked me, and ultimately gave me my own national tour then. So.
Oh, great.
As Miss Hannigan.
It's so funny. You and I have some of the same trajectories as I was in Annie.
Oh, you were?
Yes, and I worked with Joanne Worley, and I understudied the role of Rooster.
Rooster.
Yeah.
Oh, you'd be a great Rooster.
Yeah, so it was, so funny that we're talking about Annie. So you get in this national tour, and you get to play, and that is such a great role.
Oh, my gosh.
Hannigan.
Really fun.
So as you continue going forward, did you realize, hey, this is home, New York?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I felt an immediate sense of community. The theater world in New York is rather small compared to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's huge here. But everybody kind of knows everybody on the Broadway scene. And there's a real nice sense of community. And so I did feel at home, mm-hmm. very much so.
Did you have any favorite roles while you were in New York?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I think one of my favorite roles was a show called The Good Times Are Killing Me by Linda Barry. It was an off-Broadway show, but it got a lot of attention. It was about a neighborhood in the 1960s that was changing. That was, black people were moving into a white neighborhood.
Mm.
And there was a lot of racial tension. But the way it's written, it was written from the point of view of two little girls, two young girls. And it was just brilliant. And it was about one black, one white, and they became best friends. And then when they went back to school in the fall, they couldn't be best friends.
Mm.
Because of just the way it was set up, you know. They weren't allowed to be best friends.
Well, and the racial tensions.
The racial tensions in that time.
Yes.
So it was a great play, and I got to play this this bigoted aunt, one of the young girls' aunts, and she was it was very funny, very funny part. But I was very proud to be in that show because it had a great message, and that was one of my favorite roles. So.
Did you attend church at all while you were in
New York? I tried to go to a few different churches, different denominations. I just, nothing ever really caught me or got my attention or made me feel at home. Maybe I wasn't ready.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was so married to my career. I was so enthusiastic about that. And then I did actually become a Buddhist for 3 years. I was a Nichiren Shoshu Buddhist with the Gohonsen and chanting. And, you know, it was okay. It was a nice ritual. It was a meditative ritual, but it was too foreign for me. I'm chanting things that I don't know what I'm saying, you know, and it wasn't for me. I'll just put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel at home.
Right. But you've always had, in our previous discussions, you've always sort of had a spiritual connection
to God. Oh, I've always been
God.
On some sort of pilgrimage, you know. Mm. I've been looking for something for a spiritual home. And it took me, gosh, my whole life to find HUMC, Hollywood United Methodist. So.
Yeah, which we'll get to.
Okay.
But I love that. So, but you're, in a way, you are a seeker.
Yeah.
Trying to find connection. It's not really happening. But also, you're in a really tough town. New York is, it's not only a tough town to break into, but it's a tough town.
It is.
They've got thick skin there.
It's very tough.
It's interesting because you were there, as you're describing it, 70s, the yeah. 80s, the 90s.
Right.
Each of those decades a little bit different. But the 80s, of course, brought on the AIDS epidemic.
Right.
And so that had to be challenging because the church was really down on the gay community.
It sure
and
was.
Blaming them for the epidemic. How did you navigate through that?
We lost so many people. Not only did it destroy a lot of our talent, our audiences died.
Mm.
You know, it really affected our audiences. So there was a lot of anger in New York in the theater community. People were angry. And yeah, that was a turnoff to the church, you know, blaming the gay community for AIDS. Come on.
Well, it just had to be tough. And almost you may have felt like I have to hide myself because if I start talking about Jesus,
right,
they're being given conflicting stories about who Jesus is.
That's
or
right.
At least by their actions.
That's right. I mean, these so-called Christians were not being very Christian. At all, you know, spewing hate.
Yeah.
And as we say at our church, hate is not a Christian value.
It is not. Wow. So you're dealing with all of this. You're in this seeking mode, but always open to God.
Right.
You get into the 90s. As you're approaching toward the end of the 90s, at the year 2000, did you feel sort of a shift happening in your life? Where you felt like a move might need to happen?
I did. I would say for the last 5 years I lived in New York, it was just too hard. I was becoming brittle. I was becoming angry. I didn't like who I was turning into.
Mm.
And one day I was coming home from an audition. I was in the subway, and I saw an old woman with a cane coming down icy subway steps.
Mm.
And I thought, that is not going to be me. You know, I don't want to have that in my older years. So, you know, the only other mecca at the time was L.A. for an actor. And I also didn't like what was happening to Broadway. It was becoming Disneyland, and it wasn't doing the kind of theater that I wanted to do. And so I packed my bags and moved to L.A. And I did it kind of incrementally. First, I came out and sublet a place. Then I had to go back and regroup and sublet my place in New York for a while. And when I did that, 9/11 happened.
Mm.
So I was there for 9/11. I lived on the 31st floor of a building, so I watched the whole thing. I was downtown.
Oof.
I watched the whole thing from my window. Yeah, it was pretty horrible.
Yeah.
And scary. Yeah, I remember watching it from my window and then watching it on TV over and over and over again on my sofa, just watching the news coverage. And all of a sudden, I realized I was thirsty. And I looked at the clock, and I had been sitting there for like 7 hours. I hadn't moved. I think I was in shock. You know, I was still in my pajamas, and here it was, you know, getting into the evening, and I was, anyway. Yeah, it was a terrible day. Then about 2 days later, I decided to venture out.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to take a walk around Gramercy Park, which is, I lived in that neighborhood, and it's a very beautiful little block square park. And so I go there, and on every surface, on every bit of the wrought iron fence around the park were the faces of missing, you know, people had put up, you know, pictures of their loved ones who had, it was the faces of the dead is what we were looking at. You know, there were 3,000 people down at the end of the island who were cremated, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I became very emotional. I just thought, and they were all so young. They all looked so young, all these beautiful young faces. And I sat down on the curb, and I started to cry. And this big black limo pulled up with tinted windows. And the window came down, And this big guy inside said, "Are you okay, ma'am?" I said, "Oh, yes, I'm okay. I'm just very upset about what's happened in our city, and I'm very sad." And he miraculously parked. There was a place to park right in front of him, which never happens in New York. He got out. He was a big bear of a guy, perched his enormous frame next to me on the little curb I was sitting on, and we talked. And I said, "I'm so afraid that there's more evil in the world than good." Mm-hmm. And he said, "No." He said, I have been down at Ground Zero all day working, and I can tell you right now there's so much more good than evil in the world. I've seen it with my own eyes, and I can tell you that, and you must believe me. And so he made me feel much better, and he was so kind. And when he got up to walk away, on the back of his jacket, it said Justice Department. So he was some big shot, who just took the time to talk to little old me and offered me a ride home. I said, "No, I live a block away. It's fine. I'm fine." And I always wondered, who was this guy? And in many ways, it felt like a visitation from an angel. Mm-hmm. I felt like he was just brought to me. It was all so miraculous, the way it all sort of happened. Yeah, that was cool. And that, I think, gave me the strength to just go about my life as planned. Mm-hmm. And that was to come back to L.A., and I did. I came back here and proceeded with my career, which was going pretty well at that time. But I did feel this emptiness inside. I knew I needed some sort of spiritual center. Mm-hmm. Gosh, I had been living here for probably 10 years already. And I'd driven past Hollywood United Methodist many times, but I'd never noticed it was a Methodist church. And I'm sitting at the light at Highland and Franklin, and I turned my head and looked at the sign, and it said Methodist. I went, "Oh, my gosh, it's a Methodist church." Well, I was raised in a Methodist church. And it must be progressive. It's got that big red ribbon on it. It must be pretty cool. And so the next Sunday I went, and I've been there ever since. Mm. So, and I'm very happy there. The first sermon I heard, I felt like Reverend Kathy was talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
Personally. It was one of those magical things.
Yes.
Again, I was divinely guided.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to think about those moments whenever you have time to reflect of where were divine messages coming and which you were open to receiving them.
Right.
Because a lot of the times we close ourselves off, we get busy with life, and it's sort of like you were at that traffic light and you had that just a little window for God to go, "Okay, in we go."
Yeah.
And then you turn your head. How often had you turned your head? Now this time you turn your head and, "Hello."
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah. I love that. And I love the aspect that you're sharing, although it is a heart-rendering story about the gentleman that sat with you at the curb. You can look at him as an angel in disguise.
Yeah.
I believe God uses us as angels for other people if we're open to being that, but sometimes we don't know that we are.
Right. That's true.
What do you think evil is? How do we offset evil as Christians?
Wow, that's a hard question. Well, I think evil is anything that tries to squelch love. Mm-hmm. It is kind of the opposite of love and God. God is love, so evil is the opposite of that. And evil tends to be pretty active.
Mm.
It tends to want to make itself known. So it's important to have a spiritual home.
Mm-hmm. And so ways that we offset it are by love.
Right.
Yes.
And compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And kindness.
I think evil also, it squelches whenever the word forgiveness even comes up.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's true. That's true.
So you have had an epiphany in a way. And for those listeners, If you've never been to New York and you don't understand the way the subway happens, they don't have elevators.
No.
And so you're talking about the steps. So that is definitely treacherous for someone who has challenges to go up and down.
Right.
I can only imagine with a cane and wobbly legs. Oof.
Yeah.
During icy storms.
Yeah, I decided that was not going to be me.
Well, so you decide it's not going to be you. You move to L.A., and your career continues, but just now in a different way?
Yeah, I started doing more television.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some good luck. I did a lot of episodic TV. I did a couple of little films. I did a 4-year recurring role on Nip Tuck.
Uh-huh.
That was a lot of fun. Began playing an absolutely awful person, but she was fun. She had her, she wasn't totally awful. There was a, they made her into a human being at the end.
Uh-huh. Well, so as you, you're in the theater, you continue to do theater even here in L.A.
I do.
And then you've got television going on and film. You find the church, and at the church, you become active.
I do. I was the first thing they asked me to do was be on the governance board. So I did that for a little while, and then I think it was my idea. I decided to start something where we would use the arts and theater within the church, within mm-hmm. a service, like to do sketches or little films. And so we started the worship and arts team, and that has been my passion and kept me going for, gosh, 10, 12 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. We do, you know, we do Christmas movies, and every year we do on Palm Sunday, we do the Passion Play.
Yes.
And we do some funny, wonderful sketches that always relate to whatever the scripture is of that week. Sometimes we're in place of the scripture. Mm-hmm. It keeps me being creative, gives me an outlet, and I get to be of service.
Well, I was going to say, it's a perfect example for those who are attending a faith community to understand that the gifts that have been bestowed upon you, to not just hold those to yourself.
Right. You have to use what gifts you've been given. It says so in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a lot of gifts, but I do have that one gift. I know what I'm doing in the theater and mm-hmm. presentation and performance. So I thought they could use my talents here. And so it's been very successful.
Yes. Well, and you've made an impact on the faith community. But it's not only the church and those in person, but the individuals that get to see it online.
Right.
You know, we celebrate and remember the life of Suzanne Dodd, who was
right.
a part of the team.
She was.
And a vital part.
She was the best actor I had. I said that at her memorial, and I think I maybe pissed off a couple of other people. But she was. She was the best. And so I always tried to use her in every sketch or movie I did. And,
oh, she was very funny. She had great comedic timing.
Oh, she was wonderful.
But that's the thing, though, is that we never know when we are putting ourselves out there how it will impact others.
That's true.
And it provides them with life, a life source. I mean, God is ultimately our life source, but the creativity is part of something that God gives us.
Right.
Who is the ultimate creator.
Right.
So I'm so glad that you are using your gifts to elevate a worship experience, but also to incorporate the body into something that is fun, inspiring, moving. Diana Jordan.
Yes.
Right? So just describe what that was like, because people won't know or know of Diana, and just explain your reasoning about that and how that came into play about the passion, because that was the passion story from a previous time.
Yeah, about 2 years ago. Diana Jordan is a wonderful woman and a wonderful actress. And she has a disability. I believe she has cerebral palsy. And so it's her speech is affected, and her walking is affected. But she's really talented.
Mm-hmm.
So I cast her as Jesus in the Passion Play. And it was so moving. It was so beautiful to see this woman who, you know, is challenged pretty profoundly, but giving this performance from her heart and her soul, it was really a very special experience for me to see that happen and to sort of allow that to be, you know, to cast her. So I cast all kinds of people. Every year the big deal is who's going to be Jesus.
Well, and I love that about you, Ruth, is that you don't box, for an example, Jesus as one thing,
right.
White male.
No.
You're looking at it from a much wider, inclusive, diverse perspective,
right. Yes.
Which is part of your theatrical background.
It is. And, you know, I believe in diversity, and I especially really wanted to help Diana because she's very active in that community, disabled people, in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been very successful. She really has. She's done some television and film and theater. She did a one-woman show. She's really something.
Yes, she is. And we give thanks to God for her being in our lives.
Yes, we do.
Yes. Oh, so as we're coming toward a close with our conversation, hope you've been having a good time.
I'm having a wonderful time. Like I'm sitting here, all I need is a coffee cup.
Oh, so we had the pandemic.
Right.
So we had the pandemic, and everything shuts down here in L.A., sometimes people don't understand the impact it really had here in L.A. because we couldn't even do church for the longest in person. We were on Zooming and online, and it was just so horrible.
Yeah.
But that also affected film and TV and theater. What did you do to bring your creativity out? Because otherwise you would have just been a shut-in and shut off. That aspect of a talent that you've been given. So what occurred?
It's very strange. I started to paint. Now I've never painted in my life. I've always thought I was a terrible artist. I can't draw. I can't, you know. But I just started to play with paints, and I started painting these sort of abstract female faces, and people liked them. I would post them on Facebook or something, and people really liked them. I ended up selling a few of them.
Uh-huh.
I sold like a dozen of them, so it was a gift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kept me sane.
Yes.
And it allowed me to use my creativity.
What drew you to paint?
A friend of mine is an art therapist, and she came to my house once and said, "You can paint." I was like, "No, I don't paint." Yes, you can. And she took me through one of her lessons that she does with the elderly, and I was able to paint something kind of good. And I thought, oh, this is fun. And I didn't immediately go into it, mm-hmm. but once the pandemic hit, I think I remembered that and thought, oh, maybe I can paint.
Yeah. So, another divine placement.
Another person acting as an angel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love always reflecting back and also making sure that we thank those individuals who have come into our life. Even if you don't see them again, you can at least bring that up to thank God for those individuals who have come.
Yeah.
Because, hey, they've provided you with inspiration and love.
Yeah, they did.
Offsetting any kind of darkness that has come in.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that was great.
So you've had continued to have a great career and having fun at church.
Yeah.
And what a blessing you are over at Hollywood United Methodist Church, which Harmony is the second campus of Hollywood UMC.
We've done a couple of things here.
Yes.
I know we did actually a 9/11 piece here we did. I'm trying to think of what else we did.
Yeah.
But I'll be back.
And we hope you will. So as we come to a close, is there something that you... want to share with the listeners?
Well, what comes to mind is my favorite line in scripture about the mustard seed. You don't need a lot of faith to make impossible things happen.
Mm-hmm.
You need a tiny, tiny mustard seed size amount of faith. And through the years, I've always thought, well, I can conjure a mustard seed size faith. I mean, I can do that. I can muster up something. Just the idea that all you have to do is believe a little bit. Just believe that God is going to help you and believe it, even if it's way in the back of your mind.
Mm.
That little bit of faith can make extraordinary things happen. So that's my favorite. That's my motto in life, you know. A mustard seed's worth of faith can make impossible things happen.
Amen. Well, it's such a great time to have been able to share this episode with you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks for asking me.
Absolutely. And look forward to having you here at Harmony and sharing the talents that you possess and have been given to you. And for those listening, we say hello. And again, thank you for being a part of this podcast listening crew. And we're going to have a great episode coming up in the next month. But in the meantime, like, share, download, all that good stuff as we continue these conversations about each other's faith journey, as well as, hey, we've got short stories and Sunday replay podcast and Inner Harmony. So much is happening, and we just want you to be a part of it. And thank you for being a part of it. So at this time, we will close and say peace.
Thanks for listening to Our Story, the podcast, with your host, Pastor Mark Stevenson. This month's guest was Ruth Williamson, and this episode was recorded and mixed by me, Donna Miller, with production support by Jace Lucas. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to Our Story, the podcast, so you never miss a new episode. You're listening to the Harmony Podcast Network, sponsored in part by Hollywood United Methodist Church. Find us on Instagram at Harmony_TLC. And on Facebook at Harmony TL. Tune in next month when we'll have a conversation between Pastor Mark and me, Donna Miller. Until next time, as Pastor Mark likes to say, peace.